Hello and welcome to the show. Today I'm going to be talking about PFL 8, which is taking place this weekend in Cardiff at the Motorpoint Arena. This will be the beginning of the playoffs for the welterweights and the heavyweights this weekend. We've got two events, Cardiff this weekend, and then we've got London the weekend after on August 20th. The weekend just gone was an event as well. We had the lightweights and the light heavyweights fight off, so we already know who's going through to the finals in those two weight classes. This weekend, we're going to decide on the welterweights and the heavyweights. And then the weekend after, we've got the women's lightweight, Kayla Harrison in that weight class, and the men's featherweight, which is Brendan Loughnane and Chris Wade, as well as two other very exciting fighters, which I'll talk about in next week's show. So this week, we're focusing primarily on the welterweights and the heavyweights. Just a quick catch up if you don't know how this works. So PFL have got a regular season, which has already taken place in the 2022 year. We've just started the playoffs, and then the winners of the playoffs go through to the championships in November. There's a point system. So as the fighters work through their regular season, they gather points. So they get 3 points for a decision. They get 6 points if they finish the fight in the first round, 5 for the second round, and 4 for the third. So there's like a, you know, there's an escalating reward system for finishing your opponents. At the end of the regular season, each one of the leaderboards is that we take the top four fighters off each leaderboard and they move through to the playoffs. So the four fighters of each weight class we've got on this show this weekend all finished highest in that bracket of the welterweights and heavyweights. And for good reason as well. We had some really good finishes, which I'm going to show you. So starting off with the welterweights, we've got Sadibou C taking on Carlos Leao. Now, Sadibou C is the guy that's just beaten Rory McDonald by decision. So that is a huge credential to have on his record. On the other side, you've got Carlos Leao, who's on an 11-fight win streak. And he brings in a record of 17-3. He's also got a win over the two-time PFL champ, Ray Cooper III. So you've got to think that both of these guys are coming in with a tremendous amount of confidence. They've both got wins over top contenders in this bracket already. Now, what's interesting to me about Sadibou C, well, about this fight generally, is the height and reach difference between the two. Like, Leal is a shorter, compact fighter that he's going to have to close distance and get his hands on Sadibou C, or at least stay close enough to him to land power punches without being on the range, on the end of his range, getting picked off. He's got a 4-inch height advantage and an 8-inch reach advantage. An 8-inch reach advantage. And C has also got a 50% finishing rate. So you've got to think that first fight is going to be a very interesting one between a guy that's very short and powerful and needs to close distance in order to get his hands on his opponent and in order to continue this win streak that he's on. And then Sadibou C, who, if he wins this, he's going to go through to the final and he's going to be sitting in his changing room waiting for the main event to take place because he's already got a win over Rory McDonald. So if McDonald beats Umalatov in the finals, he's already got that psychological advantage going into the finals. I like the way that this plays out. I like the fact that they fight each other a couple of times and that they've got a lot of common opponents because, you know, it keeps things rather interesting. That's what's just happened this weekend. I meant to talk you through this before I started rattling off about this weekend's card. So the weekend that's just happened, Friday, August 5th, we had the event in New York. So this is exactly what I'm talking about because Stevie Ray fought Anthony Pettis again. And those of you that will be following this will have seen Stevie Ray's submission finish, that twister triangle body lock modified situation that he got Pettis in. They rematched again on Friday and Stevie Ray won a decision. So he's now progressed through to the finals in November. And on the other side of the bracket, you've got Olivier Aubin Mercier, who beat Alexander Hernandez. So he's moved through as well. So we've got Stevie Ray and Aubin Mercier have moved through to the lightweight semifinals. And on the other side of that card, we had Rob Wilkinson against Delan Monte. Rob Wilkinson is just devastating everybody he's facing right now. I mean, you might remember this guy. He was the guy that lost to Adesanya in Adesanya's debut. He doesn't look the same anymore. I mean, he looks like the second coming of Don Fry. He's massive. He's got this wicked mustache, and he's just smashing people in the first round. I mean, he's looking devastating. And then on the other side of the bracket, we've got Omari Akhmadov, who got a decision win over Josh Silveira, and that was a hell of a fight. Definitely worth tuning in for that one. They were teammates fighting one another as well. There was quite a lot of that in the build-up because Akhmadov fights out of ATT. Josh Silveira is Conan Silveira's son. So you've got to imagine that was a really difficult circumstance for them to manage. So anyway, so we have the finalists for the lightweight and the light heavyweight championships. We have Stevie Ray on one side taking on Olivier Aubin-Mercier, and we have Rob Wilkinson taking on Omari Akhmadov. So that's the first portion of the November card sorted out. This weekend, we're going to sort out the next part. So the first fight of the welterweights is Sedabu C against Carlos Liao. The other side of the bracket in the main event, we've got Rory McDonald taking on Magomed Umalatov. But after the Carlos Liao Sedabu C fight, we move on to the heavyweights. So on one side of the bracket, we have Denis Golsov taking on Mateusz Scheffel. And on the other side, we have Ante Delea taking on Henan Ferreira. This just all round is going to be a train wreck. These guys are absolute wrecking balls. So Golsov has experience advantage. He has a height advantage. He has a reach advantage. So he's got 3 inches in height and reach. He's got, I don't know, maybe 10 fight experience advantage over his opponent. He's got 11 submissions and 13 knockouts on his record. But then on the other side, you've got Mateusz Scheffel, who's got 11 knockouts at 16 wins. And he's a very kind of patient striker. Scheffel's a late replacement. He's coming in to replace Bruno Capoloza, who he's just beaten by unanimous decision, who was the previous champion. So there's a lot of storylines coming into this one, but Golsov is going to be a very, very difficult person to get around. I mean, I've got a couple of bits to show you here. So Golsov is like a bear. I mean, all of these heavyweights are huge, by the way, as well. But the biggest one is in the next fight. I mean, he's like a legitimate heavyweight size John Jones, and I don't say that lightly. So this is Denis Golsov, and what we've seen from him is this mauling game where he just crowds his opponent up against the fence, charges in with clubbing hands and a big knee to the midsection, and then clinches. And then up against the fence, he gets that body lock, and then he uses those long limbs to wrap and drag and twist his opponent to the floor. And I expect him to try and do this to Scheffel, because Mateusz Scheffel is going to want to keep this one on the feet and slow it down to a pace where he can let his Muay Thai work. But if he gets clinched and put on the floor, this is what, I mean, look at that lovely little shovel punch on the underside. See how he brings that under the arm and comes up under the chin. Like, really creative striking on the floor from Golsov. And Goodale just didn't have anything for him. I mean, he just held him down and beat him up. I expect him to try and do the same thing here. Scheffel has already faced Ante Delea, who's in the next fight. So's Denis Golsov. So Ante Delea is in the next fight, who, I'll be honest, I'm the most excited about. Trained by the legend Mirko Krokop. He's a vicious puncher. He's got great submissions on his record as well. He's also got a decision win over Golsov and a stoppage win over Mateusz Scheffel, which I'm going to show you next. Delea, for me, is one of the most exciting fighters that the PFL have got on their record. He's a scary individual. He's incredibly powerful. He stands at 6'8". Is he 6'8"? No, am I going the wrong way? No, sorry, he's 6'5". So he's the second biggest heavyweight in this division. The biggest is his opponent, who's 6'8", with an 85-inch reach. Let me just put that in context for you. So Stefan Struve and John Jones have got the longest reach, which is 84.5 inches. So according to the PFL statistics, he's got a longer reach than Stefan Struve and John Jones. And I'll show you him in a second. You'll see the way he moves. You'll see why I say John Jones, because he's very kind of loose and fluid and he's got long limbs. Going back to his opponent, Ante Delea, though, a dangerous power puncher who walks his way into range like no one can hurt him and waits for you to throw to counter. So this is his opponent, Mateusz Scheffel, who's in the previous fight against Golsov. And this is his memory of fighting Ante Delea. Getting smashed in the face, backed up against the fence with big, meaningful power punches. And then once he's trapped against the fence, getting hit with a solid jab on the chin, which puts him down. Look at that, bang, right on the chin. And that's not what finishes the fight. That's what drops him in the first round. He ends up getting up into the... Oh, this is the replay from the ref cam. I'm kind of on the fence about ref cam. What do you think? I don't know. I'm not sure. If I was a referee, I'd be refusing to be a cameraman, to be honest. But that's just me. I want to get another cameraman. We need a Raptor in there, Jamie. You could be running around behind the cameraman. You could stay out of the way of these big boys, right? Look at that. Big jab on the chin. Drops him on the spot. Like, incredibly powerful. But that's the first round, as I said. The second round, this is the bit I wanted to show you. Here we go. Same thing again. got him backed up against the fence, keeps him away with that nice, long, powerful jab. And it's not like he's powerful, but he doesn't have technique. He's got good technique as well, which you would imagine he would have training with Krokop. Nice, long jab. Look at that. Now, Scheffel, this is what I'm talking about with Scheffel. He's patient. You can see him just kind of posturing, ready to throw that left hook. He's very good at managing distance, but he just couldn't keep away from Dallaire. And when we talk about counter-striking, this is probably one of the best you're going to see. So Scheffel's going to go switch high kick. And Dallaire is going to catch it on the outside of his forearm. And as soon as that kick has made contact with his forearm, he's going to pull that fist up and smack him right in the face with it. It's like he feels the trigger on his outside arm and he goes, bang, punch. It's clearly something that he's drilled as a counter. So here's the switch kick. I mean, kind of body, kind of head. I think he'd have liked it to have been a head kick, but it maybe fell to the body. But just watch out. As he catches it on the outside of his arm, he just goes straight into a power punch. Before Scheffel's even managed to settle his feet, he doesn't even hit him correctly. His wrist even bends. That's how powerful this guy is. Scary, scary dude. Here we go. Watch this. I want you to watch this elbow. The speed at which he goes, hit, trigger to punch. There was just no way that Scheffel was going to get out of the way, especially with him being so close to the fence. There's the kick, and there's the elbow. And that's going straight through to the jaw there. Beautiful. So you've got Ante Dallaire on one side, who's got that knockout win over Scheffel, who's in the other side of the bracket, and he's got a decision win over Golsov. So this is either going to be one of these guys is going to go through and get payback, or they're going to go through and meet the same fate as last time. However, the opponent across the other side of the smart cage from Ante Dallaire is Henan Fajeda, who has one of the most emphatic 25-second knockouts that you'll ever see. And he's huge. I mean, 6'8", 85-inch reach. And he's like proportionally built for a heavyweight as well. I mean, look at the size of this guy. Like, he throws a kick in a minute and it doesn't land. I mean, fortunately, this one doesn't land. The next one does. But you just see the length of his legs as he throws this kick. Look at the size of the guy. I mean, like, he's practically taking up half of the cage with his leg span, and what follows this is exactly what's to be expected when someone starts throwing tree trunks around. He gets out the way of that one. He's like, nah, I'm getting into this one. He's like, let me quick get a takedown on this guy. Wham, stiffs him on that lead leg. I mean, it's just. You just can't imagine ever feeling safe from this guy. Even in those moments in fights when you're on the outside and you're kind of bouncing around having a breather, you're still going to feel like this guy can reach you. It's like when people fight John Jones. They feel like they're backed up against the fence and they're out of range and he's still able to hit them with elbows and stuff. Fajeda's got the least experience out of all of the people in the heavyweight bracket with nine wins and three losses. But he's got 7 knockouts and he's got 1 triangle. So he's not going the distance very often. This was a 25-second knockout, and I very much feel like he's just finding his feet. If he doesn't beat Dallaire this time around and go through to the finals, we're going to see this guy in the next season and the season after, and I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a belt around his waist. Because he's a behemoth with really, really good striking skills. Here we go again. He's going to go gadget front kick leg. Look at that. I mean, that is ridiculous. His opponent sees that whistle past his cheekbone and he goes, I'm going to take this guy down. There's no way I'm playing striking with this guy. And level changes right onto his shin. Yeah, I think we've got a replay from a different angle. Here we go. Oh no, here's the regular at the same angle. I mean, look at the size of his legs. It's ridiculous. And then skips straight through, throws the same kick again. But unfortunately for his opponent, he level changes directly onto the shin and he's out. Here we go, another angle. Look. It'd just be so much hard work to try and deal with someone that size. And I know that Dallaire's, you know, he's only a few inches shorter. but the leg reach, the limb length of this guy is going to be considerable. Right, hang on, let me just see if they've got the layer's reach on the athlete. Yeah, 79 inches. I mean, it's, you know, he's still got a 6-inch reach disadvantage, and 79 inches is a decent reach. Problems this guy is. So that's the heavyweight bracket. I kind of went on a little bit. But we've got Denis Golsov taking on Mateusz Scheffler, and we've got Ante Delea taking on Henan Fajeda. The winners of those two fights will move through into the championship brackets here, and then we'll have the heavyweight champion crowned in November at PFL 10. The main event, of course, is going back to the welterweight division. So we had Sadibou Si against Carlos Leal in the first fight on the main card. Culminating this portion of the playoffs is Rory McDonald taking on Magomed Umalatov. Now, Rory's in a bit of a tough spot. He's a veteran, an experienced fighter. He's been in some of the best fights that we'll ever see, and you know he'll always go down in the history books for those fights. But he's still in a position of his career where he's young enough and determined to be competitive. But he's coming off a loss to Sadibou Si, who's on the other side of this bracket. Now he's taking on Magomed Umalatov, who's an undefeated 12-0 fighter who's got serious power. This is either going to be Rory going, "You're not quite ready yet, kid. Maybe next season," or this kid going, "Sorry, Rory, you're just not able to compete with these guys at the top of this division anymore." I mean, he's got a loss to Sadibou Si, as I said. You know, if he wins this fight, he has the potential maybe to get that rematch back if Si gets past Liao. But of course, that's up for speculation. By the time he fights Umalatov, he'll know who he's facing in the final if he wins. So is that an additional incentive? You know, would he really want to fight Sadibou Si again? You just don't know how these things are playing into their minds. The fact that that Magomed Umalatov is coming in with such hype and such attention on him is something that Rory certainly got to respect, though. Having said that, the experience that Rory's got compared, I mean, so of course, on one side, you've got the undefeated fighter with 12 fights, and then you've got Rory McDonald with 23-9-1, loads of experience, top-level experience, trained at TriStar for years. You know he's got good wrestling, and you know that he's got good submissions. We've seen that in the regular season when he took out Brett Cooper. Super quick, really nice. Level changed on a single, 9 seconds into the first round? Fainted the jab, got Brett Cooper to reach for it, tried to pat it away, distracted him with hands. Level changed straight onto a single leg. And watch how he drags him here, drags him towards the fence and runs that pipe. So he turns him around, he's got a catch on the ankle, and he's got to wrap around the back of his hips, and he's going to run him to the fence. Run him into a position where he's got no base. Lift his leg up and topple him. And then once he was in top position, you know, as you would expect from Rory against pretty much anybody, he's able to progress to a mount position where he works his ground and pound. And I mean, I've trained with Rory. He is incredibly strong, very good on the ground. If he gets in top position, it's going to be incredibly difficult to move him. And with that top position comes nasty elbows and ground and pound, which often forces his opponents to turn, which is what happened against Brett Cooper here. Look how high mount he is here. Now, Brett Cooper is going to be feeling this arm's exposed as well because his elbow's so vulnerable. Like, Rory's got a few options here. But the safest, most obvious option is just to sit high and ground and pound and wait for him to turn and keep tight on his hips. You see how Rory's adjusting his legs. So now he's got now instead of being in mount, Cooper's turned, and now Rory's got a leg across his midsection. He's pretty much in a body triangle position here already. And he just continues with the ground and pound, but he's already got that. You can see that foot here. You can see how he's literally underneath Brett Cooper. He's got a full wrap around his body. So no matter whether Brett Cooper stays in a mounted position and keeps receiving ground and pound or turns, there's now no longer hooks to defend because he's going to go straight into a body triangle position, which is there it is. You can see the feet come together. Rory falls off to the side and gets a good bite on that rear naked choke. He's a very, very strong grappler. And I feel like the smart thing for him to do in this fight would be to time the overconfidence and the punching, the power punches of Umalatov. Get on that single leg, drag him to the floor. I mean, of course, it's going to be difficult with Umalatov, who's got great wrestling as well. But MMA grappling and the way that Rory's been trained over the years, he's very efficient. He's got good, clean pathways, like we saw here against Brett Cooper. Ground the fight, control from top position, ground and pound, and then work to finish. And, you know, if he wins, obviously he moves through to the final. There's $1 million on the line. There's a lot on the line here. But there's also the, you know, Umalatov is 12-0. It's the same as Henan Fajeda in the heavyweights at 9-3. Like, of course, it's amazing to be in this position. It would be disappointing if they lose because they lose out on the opportunity to win that $1 million. But then there are other fighters that are in a different position. Like this, I would feel like this pressure on Rory McDonald to win here and to stay in this tournament because people expect him to, you know. Like, if Henan Fajeda goes on to knock out Anto Delea and then beats the winner of the Golsov Sheffield fight, it'd be like, my goodness, we've got a guy who's now, 11-3. He's the PFL champ. People would be surprised and excited for him. But then next year's expectations would be so high. For Rory McDonald, those expectations have followed him over from the UFC, from those amazing marquee fights that he had. And the opponent that he's got in front of him, let me just show you Magomed. Magomed Umalatov. Very confident striker, very relaxed, likes to stand in the pocket and let his opponents step in so he can just block them and start working close range elbows and clinch work. Really, really good close range striker. Clearly very strong and very confident in his striking skills as well. Look how he sweeps his opponent, Al Salehi, up against the fence. Like, forces him to attack, catches him as he steps in with that power shot. Clinch, drags him down onto a solid knee to the body. But it's the way he knocks him out. I mean, you can see the way he wades in with these power shots. This is what I'm talking about with Rory. Like, look how hard he's stepping on that lead leg. He's throwing that power shot over the top. If Rory can use his footwork to back up and tempt him to throw those power shots, it might be easier to, you know, to snatch single that lead leg and put him on the floor. It doesn't mean he can keep him there, but it does mean that Umalatov might scramble and turn his back in the process. But if you stand in the punching range of this guy, eventually he's going to connect with something. And once he's hurt you, he doesn't let you off. This little back fist that he landed against Al Salehi is really slick. Reminds me of Andrei Arlovsky. The great Andrei Arlovsky. Watch this. Front kick. Al Salehi catches it and tries to counter, and he kicks him away. See how he pushes away with the leg and then comes back with a back fist. This is what I'm looking at. So Salawi's caught his ankle. You're going to see Umalatov kick his leg, so almost as if he's trying to kick him in the midsection, but he misses. He goes past him. But as he kicks, he pulls his arm back and smacks him in the face with this wicked back fist. Look at that. Whack. And you can see immediately Al Salawi's leg go. And then Umalatov chases him down. And there's the finishing shot. Big right hand over the top. Stepping through with power punches, chasing him down. Orthodox stance. Big left hook, steps through to southpaw, back to orthodox, to power another big right hand over the top. And then puts him down. Here we go. There's the front kick. He goes to stomp that leg free, but misses. Comes back with the back fist. And then chases him. Long left hook, just clips him, loads the right hand. Look how he launches that over the top. It's like he's throwing a fastball. Here's the back fist. It's so cool. I mean, you just can't underestimate these strikes. You know, you can land all kinds of interesting shots in MMA, and they can have really interesting effects on the body. Like, immediately his legs go, and look how calm he is. Look how he's, like, hunting him down. Goes to the big left hook, lands that, but not quite with enough purchase. And then loads the right hand, bang, right on the chin. I mean, what a fight that's going to be, him and Rory McDonald. Because we know Rory can take a shot. I mean, that's kind of what his career's been about. It doesn't mean he wants to keep taking these punches from these guys. But this momentum was as Umalatov's charging forward might work against him. If I'm Rory, that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing that 12 fights into his career, undefeated, that over-eagerness to land that knockout shot. But of course, it's going to be a real stiff test for Rory. So anyway, I've rattled on a long time, but I hope you have a better understanding of what's happening this weekend in Cardiff. We've got the welterweight playoffs, Seda Boussi taking on Carlos Leal in the first fight in the main card, and then we've got Rory McDonald taking on Magomed Umalatov in the finals. The winner of those two fights moves through to the championships in November, where they'll face off for the welterweight championship and $1 million. In between those two fights on the main card, we've got the heavyweights. Denis Golsov against Mateusz Scheffel, Ante Delea taking on Henan Fajeda. They're going to be fireworks. They're all big, powerful, explosive individuals. The winners of those two fights, of course, they move through onto the same card that Rory and Umalatov's winner and Seda Boussi and Carlos Leal, and the winners from Friday, August 5th, Ray Aubin-Mercier, Rob Wilkinson and Omari Akhmedov. Loads of good stuff coming up. Nice CPFL coming over to the UK, and this is going to be a banger of a card. All right. Catch the other show next week for PFL 9, and I'll see you next time.